Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Made by Mamas, the podcast. I'm Zoe.
And I'm Georgia.
And we're here talking all things parenthood. You know, the real conversations.
Tips and tricks.
Products we love.
And brands we can't live without.
Let's get into it. Hello.
Hello. How are you? That was like a hello.
Hello.
And I'm just here like, oh, hi, how are you?
I'm zingy today. I'm buzzy.
I can't tell. I couldn't tell that from that intro at all.
I'm happy, George. Are you happy?
I'm happy. I am. I went out for a run at 6:30 a.m. this morning.
Oh,
and
go
I
away.
Arrived home before anyone in the house was awake.
How long did you run for? 2.5 minutes?
No, I didn't. I did 40 minutes, thank you. And yeah, I mean, so yeah, just good start to the day. But why are you so zingy?
Firstly, well done. Like, great. I'm going to give you a high five. But how are you getting your children to sleep until 7:15?
I don't know, but let's not jinx it. I don't want to talk about it.
But do they go to bed late? What time do they go to bed?
No, they go to bed at like 7.
Who else thinks this is incredibly unfair?
Sorry, I know you shouldn't mention these things. And even now I've mentioned it, it's not going to happen tomorrow. So, you know, anyone who's wishing it,
for you.
I'll be up at 5 tomorrow. Just like, I literally will, won't I? Because I've put it out to the sleep unit, like the sleep gods.
Sleep gods, yeah.
But how are you and why are you so zingy?
Oh God. I've got to share a story that happened across the weekend because I'm sort of smiling through the agony of what I went through on Saturday night because I've never felt more embarrassed or grossed out by anything in my whole parenting life. So basically, Dozer and I, we have a really lovely Saturday night, and then we think, right, let's have a little bit of Saturday night delight. Is that what we're calling it? I know. I'm sorry. I don't know. We thought we'd have a quick shag. Anyway, so we are in the bedroom in a compromising position, and we normally, so like the kids sort of know that if the door's shut, that, you know, the older ones at least, they know to knock, but obviously it doesn't know that yet. So the door's shut and the telly is on, which is weird for us because we normally turn the telly off. But anyway, we left it on. So anyway, we're going at it.
Oh
God. And I am sort of, I need to tell you the position because...
You told me the position in like, like very graphic detail and I feel like I'm scarred. So,
oh God. So like on the floor, but like...
Oh God.
I'm sorry. But you need to know because I couldn't see the door. So I'm basically like kneeling on the floor, but like bending over the bed. And then Doz is behind me with like kneeling on one knee and then the other knee's at a 90 degree angle. Anyway, fully going for it. Like, you know, everything's happening. And then before I knew it, Kit is standing right next to me, as in right there, like fucking, I just don't know how we didn't hear the door go. And he went, "Mummy, what's daddy doing to you?"
Oh, fucking God.
Oh, God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Oh,
I jumped
God.
Up so quickly, hurt Dozer in the process. He was like, ah. And I was like, ah, oh, God. And he was like, "Why are you two nudie Rudy?" And I was like, "Daddy is stretching me out." And he was like, "What's wrong with you?" And I was like, "I've hurt my back." Anyway, I ushered him back to bed. He was in tears. I felt like I traumatized the poor little fucker. And then he kept waking up every 10 minutes, like crying out, going, "I feel sad." And I was like, this is the time in his life where he's going to need therapy for the next 40 years.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I would love to reassure you. But that is true. That's true. I'm joking. I'm sure it's not.
The worst
I'm
part
sure
of it was that I then had to come in and finish it.
Oh,
finish
shut
the
up.
Job.
How?
You've met my husband, right? He's literally like, he thought it was hysterical. I was like shaking throughout the whole thing, just going, just hurry up. Just finish off because I'm not enjoying this now.
God. I mean, I just don't think I would ever be able to have sex ever again in my entire life.
I'm not sure I can
that happened. Because that's scary. But I mean, hang on. But you have managed to convince Kit that it didn't happen, haven't you? So that is the good part of this story, is that Kit doesn't think it happens. He thinks he dreamt it.
He kept saying to me all day Sunday, how's your back, mummy? Did you want me to stretch you out? And I was like, no.
Oh gosh, this episode gets weirder and weirder. Actually, I think we probably should put a little warning at the beginning of this podcast. Don't listen to this podcast if you've got kids around. I don't think you do, but definitely don't today. Like, definitely not. Not. In fact, don't listen to this episode with anybody. I wouldn't want to listen to this with anyone. I'd be dying. Ask anyone at all. No one. Go and sit on your own.
It leads us on quite nicely because we are having a conversation today around sex.
We are.
We've got a sex educator on the podcast who, if she was here for this chat, she'd be saying, don't laugh. This is just a natural thing that two people in love do. Yeah. So I don't feel that bad about it.
Actually, it would have been good if this had happened like before we spoke to her, wouldn't it? Because she probably would have made you feel better. And actually, the conversation, like giggling at the beginning of this episode, aren't we? And like laughing. That is our natural way of tackling these things. But actually, this episode, it isn't like giggles and silliness and anything like that. It's actually quite serious. Like, this is her job. It's her profession. She's studied sex for years. She's been all over the world, like, taking part in different workshops and all that kind of stuff. Not in a seedy way, in a like educational way and like an explorative way. Like, it's a really different like way to hear about sex and talk about sex than we have on this podcast, or actually I've heard anyone before.
Yeah. And also, how many times have we got to the end of the day? I saw something on Instagram the other day, and it was a funny video of a wife speaking to her partner, going, later on, I can't wait, I'm gonna do this to you tonight's our night, it's gonna be amazing. And then you get to the end of the day and you go, get off me, don't touch me. But if that is happening continuously, you feel like you've lost the fire between the two of you. We all need some help in that area. And don't freak out, because if it's gone, it will come back. It ebbs and flows. There are moments where you don't want to touch a partner, and there are others where it's there and it's alive again. So this is a conversation for everybody at whatever part of your sexual journey with your partner you're at, whichever part of the relationship you're at with them, postpartum, then get your ears around this, because it's a really amazing conversation. Let's get into it. Georgia, who are we talking to today?
We are chatting to the absolutely incredible Jenny Keane.
Well, I wish that you could see my face right now, because there are certain podcast episodes that you wait and wait for because you know they are going to be absolutely bloody wonderful. And today's episode is 100% one of those. Today's guest, a sex educator who runs the Orgasm Online, which is a massively popular workshop, about 120,000 people on Instagram alone, I think. She is she's a tantric yoga expert. She is a holistic sex educator. Please let's welcome Jenny Keane to the podcast.
Thank you.
Oh, I know Zoe's gonna love this chat. But how are you today, Jenny? I mean, I don't know what I expected. I didn't know if I'd expect you to be like sitting on like some black satin sheets or something for this episode. But you're wearing a beautiful oversized knit, so that is right up my street.
Yeah. No, I'm like tracksuit bottoms and oversized jumpers. That's me.
And how are you feeling? Because you're due in March, so we're not that long away, are we?
Yeah, I'm 31 weeks pregnant right now. So, but I feel great. I feel really fantastic. I actually feel like I want to slow down the pregnancy at the moment, because I'm just really enjoying being pregnant.
It's actually so nice to hear.
Oh yeah, it's. I feel really good right now. I mean, I've had ups and downs throughout the pregnancy. So, the last couple of weeks and like in this moment in time, I feel so comfortable in my body, and it's really exciting to feel all the kicks, and it's nice to just be in my body.
Yeah, and you do feel really present, don't you? There's nothing quite like getting a kick in the stomach from a baby that you're growing to make you feel in the moment.
Yeah, and it's funny because I don't know whether I'm very resistant. Like if someone says I should do something or feel something, I tend to revolt and do the opposite just because. So everyone keeps saying to me like, oh, like this is going to fly by, like wait until it's just going to fly by and soon the baby's going to be here. And I think because of that, I'm just like, no, I'm going to live day to day here in this pregnancy. Yeah. It's like, and try and, you know, enjoy as marinated in as much as I can, you know?
Yeah, yeah, that's lovely to hear. Jenny, talk to us about how you have kind of got to where you've got to, because you are really transforming the way that we talk about sex, think about sex, discuss it amongst friends. I just think it's such an interesting kind of space that you're in. You're just making such incredible moves in it. So how did you get to where you've got to today?
Yeah, do you know what? I don't have a linear pathway into becoming a sex educator. I basically started this, I suppose, officially in my early 20s when I moved from Ireland to San Francisco. So I was living in California and I was a ski instructor. I was also teaching yoga and I was in these women's circles essentially, and they were speaking about how to connect with your menstrual cycle. And this was really interesting to me because I'd always had a very difficult relationship with menstrual cycle. I was put on the pill very young to kind of try and attempt to regulate it, which also didn't even work. But I had an extremely irregular cycle. I'd be, you know, incapacitated when my period did come, and I'd have it for at least 2 weeks, sometimes 3 weeks. And it was just very debilitating. There was really no education. And also there was no understanding that you could have a relationship with your menstrual cycle beyond just going on the pill and hoping for the best. So when I was living in California and I was hearing all of this, and it was a lot more, I suppose, a much more holistic path, I was really curious. Now, some of the stuff that I was hearing was extremely like woo-woo to me, right? It was like, you know, oh, connect your menstrual cycle to the moon cycle and all that kind of stuff. And I was like, oh, I don't know about that. But like at the same time, I was suffering so much and really didn't want to be on the pill either, because I had kind of really adverse side effects on the pill with regards to my mental health. And I had like suicidal thoughts on one pill that I was put on. So I didn't want to be on the pill if I could manage it. So I was at this point, I was kind of like, I will literally do anything. I'll dance to the moon if I have to. Anyway. So I started then going to workshops, basically around learning about your menstrual cycle. And then in those workshops, I was exposed to this extremely open community around sex and sexuality in California, because if you think about California, like this is like almost like 15, 20 years ago, very different to the Ireland that I grew up in, where you wouldn't even really see gay or homosexual couples out, I suppose, like in public. Here it was very different. There was like gay bars, and you there was, you know, no danger around going in or out of them or anything like this. And I started to have more questions about sex that like I couldn't get answered from Google, because that didn't really exist in terms of the kind of education, right? And the information didn't really exist online. And in one of the workshops, I had asked somebody about ejaculation, female ejaculation and squirting. And one of the women said, you need to go to this woman. She does weekend workshops on it. She is incredible. So I ended up in her workshop one of the weekends. And this just, I suppose, absolutely changed the way that I looked at sex, looked at my body, also understood that there was so much to know that I didn't know. And also as well, like just being in an environment where, you know, it's all women, there's this culture of being tender and gentle when it comes to how you experience your body sexually and how you inhabit your body. And I was like, God, this is so foreign to me. And I'm seeing women of all ages. And there's also a sense of like in the conversation around sex, a sense of curiosity and discovery, and that it's perfectly okay to ask questions, that sex education isn't weird or, you know, scary, or, you know, the environment isn't full of perverts and pedophiles, right? Like, it's just like,
yeah,
because there is that worry, right? There is that fear, especially when you don't receive that sex education. So this workshop basically flipped the way that I completely engaged with my body and the way that I viewed my sexuality. And especially, like, if you think, like, Ireland, like, I got no sex education whatsoever, you know. I mean, the sex education that I did get, I was in an all-girls Catholic school, you know, a priest came in and one of the last standing nuns in the school came in, right, like, to talk to us about sex education. So that was, you know, where I was coming from. So this was an entirely different world. The workshop stopped being enough for me and I started entering into training. So I was really interested in trauma therapy, and I never intended to be a sex educator. You know, I didn't have this kind of intention of, oh, this is what I'm going to do now as kind of my career. That happened really naturally. And I came home one year and my friends asked me what I was doing, which I never really spoke about, you know, in a big way, because I didn't want to feel like,
yeah,
oh,
why was
weird.
That? Yeah.
It was more so because I just kind of felt like people aren't going to get it, you know. So if I start telling people, first of all, you know, it's very different now, right? When we think about, like, even 2015, so 10 years ago, the conversations around sex were so different. They were so limited. You know, I couldn't say, oh, I'm studying somatic therapy, because nobody knew what somatic therapy was, right? So you're trying to explain it and people are just looking at you sideways. And then you're trying to explain that you're studying sex, for example. And I suppose in Ireland in particular, like, it was just kind of like, oh my God, like, what does that mean? You're studying sex, you know, are you a prostitute or something like this, right? And, like, even, for example, like, my sister called my I was in a somatic sex training, and my sister called my mum and said, and I was in a different part of the world, my sister called my mum and said, right, I think Jenny's in a sex cult, and I think we need to try and we need to have a plan here to get her out of it.
So they genuinely went to sex cult. I find that so interesting. The conversation was so out of the ordinary for them. So bizarre to them that they thought you must have been brainwashed.
I always say this, you know, like, when you're lacking sex education, you know, and you experience sexual issues, which I will say this, it doesn't matter what age you are, doesn't matter what gender you are, you are going to experience sexual issues at some point in time in your life. More than likely, you are going to experience this at multiple stages of your life. And it's really important to have sex education. When you have sex education, what happens is that when you experience a sexual issue, you actually have options and ways to approach it. And the options are really important because they give you they allow you to choose the pathway that's correct for you, right? And that is choice. And that choice is what empowerment feels like. And when you don't have education, what you have is people experiencing issues, and instead of feeling empowered to approach them, they feel disempowered, they feel disconnect, they feel like they have to disconnect from their body, disconnect from their relationships, even disconnect from their partners, and they often feel like they're broken in some way, shape or form, right? So I think this is why it was so popular, right? And also because in Ireland no one was speaking about it.
It's really interesting that you're talking about sex education, because I feel like that comes in so many different forms. Speaking for myself and my own sex education, having a, you know, parents that were very liberal and the conversation was encouraged at home, but still nobody sat me down and said, right, here's your G-spot, this is your vulva, is X, Y, and Z, this is what a climax is, this is what, you know, I went into sex completely blind and then spent 7 years faking orgasms to thinking, well, where is it and what's the fuss about? What's all the fuss about? You know, not even thinking or knowing about sex toys or about pleasuring myself. There was this complete blind, I was blind basically. And it was at 21 that I had my first orgasms out of nowhere. I literally went, what the fuck was that? And the person that I was with was like, I think you just had your first orgasm. I was like, fuck, this is amazing. But I'd been having sex for 6 years before that and not knowing what to do. So there is a complete lack of education, yes, but also what an understanding on what the body is capable of and what you should be allowed and encouraged to do. You know, as women, it's like we just lie back and think of England. How many times have we heard that phrase?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, no, I totally agree, Zoe. And I think, like, what, so in an ideal world, what would you say should, like, how should we be educating, like, I'm not saying young kids, I'm saying, you know, when we're teenagers, like, how should we be educating them? Because I had all of the tools, like, in terms of, like, contraception. Both my mum and my nan worked in sexual health clinics. So I understood.
Imagine how awkward that was.
I know. And my mum and nan were the people you went to, like, you know, for, like, a friend was going to have sex with her boyfriend. She'd come to my mum, you know, tell my mum. My mum would get her on the pill. And, like, so all of that side, totally fine. But exactly the same as Zoe. I had no idea about orgasms. I don't even think, like, I don't know how old I was. Probably when, or before I had sex, I knew about ejaculation. But that wasn't even a topic. Like, no one really spoke about that. Boys would joke about it. But you wouldn't really, like, get it. Well, yeah, in an ideal world, what should we be teaching our, you know, teenagers?
I mean, well, sex education, though, is supposed to start at quite a young age. And, you know, this is known through the research that has come out over the last couple of years that, you know, and again, when we talk about sex education, it's like sex education, like, is at different levels for different age groups, right? Sure. So they say, like, to start talking to your kids about their body parts, right, and their anatomy, like, even from the age of 3 and 4, this is really important when it comes to, you know, first of all, them understanding the correct language for their body parts. And so oftentimes you'll see, you know, people might say, like, oh, your pee-pee, or
the peanut. You know,
yeah, instead of saying, like, that's your penis. And for you know, young girls, like, when they're like, oh, what's that, mommy? It's like, oh, that's mommy's private parts, right? Like, instead of saying, like, oh, this is the vulva, right? And it's not that you're sitting down and then saying, and this is what happens, right? Like, it's like, and going into sex with a three-year-old, you're just giving them the names of their body parts. It's been proven in many different research papers that this is not just I suppose important, but it's also incredibly protective as well for young kids to be able to call the correct names for their body parts and know that there is no secrecy, right, when it comes to speaking about your private parts, right? And that's for many different reasons. And also as well, then teaching children at that age, like, that they have body autonomy as well. So one of the really big things that becomes a problem in our adult life is our relationship to the word no, right? And we know that there's, like, a huge conversation around consent happening for the last couple of years, which is amazing, kind of in the kind of wider public sphere. But if you think back to when you were a kid, like, I even see it with, like, my friends' kids and this, and, you know, it's like, oh, go and give Jenny a hug. And maybe the baby, like, who hasn't even got language yet, right, can't even say the word no, turns their whole body away and kind of hides right into their mum. And what generally happens is, as we say, oh, go on, give Jenny a hug, and there's, like, this kind of pushing, you know, your toddler towards me, right? And if they do say no, then potentially, like, maybe they're a little bit older and they do say no, like, no, you know, and there's kind of real, you know, kind of feistiness attached to it. And then you might get, oh, don't be like that, you know, don't say no like that. Or they might say, oh, Jenny's going to be sad if you don't give her a hug.
Yeah.
So first of all, like, what you're teaching them is that their no isn't important, right? And that actually adults can override their feelings and their no's. And also as well, like, the whole thing of, you know, oh, go and give them the hug, Jenny's going to be sad. That's also emotional manipulation and coercion there as well happening, right? And so we don't do this because we're mean or we're trying to do this, but this is just generally what's accepted in society. And also because we have never had this education, we don't know this, right? So then we kind of wonder why, as teenagers or into our early 20s, we don't know how to say no, or we feel fearful around saying no, or we just feel like, oh, do you know what, it's easier to go along with it. These patterns are set from a very young age, right? And then, you know, as you progress in terms of your development and kids' development, so into, you know, preteens and teens, you're starting to teach them different things, like empathy is a really big thing for kids to understand. The problem is that a lot of us are adults now who never received any of that education. And so we're having to go back and kind of deconstruct everything that we did learn, the sexual scripts that we took on that definitely don't serve us or support us in having a relationship with our sexuality, and having to, I suppose, rebuild right on top of that structure. So my field is more so teaching adults-based sex education, because I think, you know, as I said, like, we were all adults, we were all kids once who never got the sex education we deserved, and so we're carrying all the stuff with us, you know.
We'll be right back after this short break.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Welcome back to this episode of Made by Mamas. Now, where were we?
Jenny, we hear a lot at Made by Mamas. There are lots of messages that come into our DMs daily about a lack of intimacy between couples, especially when kids come along, because obviously we're a parenting podcast. There are a lot of, we want to ask you some questions today that have been sent in by our followers, but just to kind of get an idea or an understanding from you and your expertise, like, what happens when that tiny human comes along that stops a couple from being intimate? Or at least there's that barrier there, right?
Even, you know, before you conceive, and then during the process of pregnancy, and then once the baby comes. And ultimately, really what it is a lack of tools. I think that people have a lack of tools when you don't have sex education, you don't understand how your body works, you don't understand simple, not even simple things, it's not simple, but concepts like desire, right? You don't understand the difference between desire, libido, arousal, right? And it becomes very difficult. And when there's a lack of conversation around sex in general, and I would say even a lack of, I suppose, high quality conversation around sex that exists around you, it's very difficult to actually initiate conversations with your partner. So you might be feeling like there's something wrong, but actually you don't really have the language to say it. Mm-hmm. And maybe the language that you do use to say it when you eventually attempt it is a language that is going to cause more of a disconnection, right? Because we're taught, because we're not taught how to communicate in ways that are healthy and supportive and really support intimacy and reconnecting if we have disconnected, right? So when it comes to having children, like, we know the time that they take, essentially what happens is that our priorities shift. And this is a really natural part of becoming a parent and, you know, inviting children into your life. And suddenly priorities like sleep become a really big thing, right? Mm. Rest become a really big thing. And so when it comes to intimacy and sex, sometimes, especially if it's, you know, not, I hate to say this, but like, if it's the type of sex that you know what's coming, right? When there's no novelty involved, when there's no kind of, adventure, I suppose, to it, right? Like, when you know what's coming, sometimes it's easier to just be like, do you know what? Like, I'm going to back away from this and prioritize sleep and prioritize, right? And there's so many reasons why you might do that. It mightn't even be just that there's novelty, but maybe, for example, like, you're not getting or experiencing pleasure during sex, right? And so it's really just for one person then, right? So it's learning how to have conversations. And one of the things that I will say is as well that for, you know, when it comes to our bodies, when we give birth, you know, we go through these huge changes physically, we go through these huge changes hormonally. And we have to kind of start to learn how to exist and inhabit a different body altogether, which can take us time on an individual level to connect with again and to even be okay with, right? Because I don't know if you, I mean, I haven't experienced it personally myself, but I've heard from so many people who experience this where it's just like, I just don't feel like me anymore, right? And that's the sense that you have made this massive shift into becoming an entirely different person, right? And you have to learn how to connect with that person again, right? And if you don't know who that person is, how is your partner supposed to know who that person is, right? And say, for example, if you've had physical difficulties, like whether it's during the birth or during the pregnancy, and you're just not able to have sex, right? Like whether it's you had a traumatic birth and or your body is still healing. Like they say, you know, wait six weeks to have sex, but really there is no time frame. Like everybody's body is completely different. Maybe you didn't have any physical issues, but you actually experienced a lot of emotional, I suppose, upset, right? Or difficulties. And you're trying to navigate this, right? Maybe it was more hormonal and you're trying to navigate this.
And that 6 weeks is like a ticking time bomb. It's like tick, 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 tick. All right, 6 weeks now. Go on, off you go. It's like pressure. Yeah. It's like people heal at different stages, like you said, and, you know, wants and needs and desires and all that stuff has to be built into it. And also that sex is not just a penetrative, you know, wham, bam, thank you, man. There are all these other facets to it that maybe are neglected because it's like, oh, right, you know, off you go now. You're free to go and have sex. It's like, I don't really want to.
I actually wonder if the 6 week thing sort of impact the rest of like a couple's sexual journey after they become a parent, because I think just even speaking like among friends, I think so many people, like the husband or the partner, is waiting for that 6 week mark, like, right, it's going to be this time that they're going to be back to themselves, and it's going to be 6 weeks and we're going to have sex, and actually they haven't allowed, you know, the mum or the, you know, the person who birthed the baby to heal, to mentally recover. They literally just, there's no effort gone into seeing how they are or like exactly like showing any empathy towards them. They literally just see that six weeks in their diary, like, boom, here we go. And then quite often the woman is really resentful, and then that is how you continue for, you know, for years.
It can be like that, George.
Well, adding pressure into any kind of sexual relationship is probably the worst thing that can happen, right? Because when there is pressure, you know, this is not a time when you feel free or open or, you know, willing to say yes to things. It's more of this kind of, like, even if you sense, like, when you feel pressure, how it feels in your body, there's a sense of restriction, a sense of closing, you know, a sense of being really like, oh, I'm like resisting, you know, anything that comes along, right? So learning how to take the pressure off relationships, especially after a baby arrives, is really, really important. And so, you know, some of the things that I always recommend people to do would be, first of all, to look at what are their motivations to having sex, right? Like, what's the reason that you have sex in the first place? And so some people have sex because it's I suppose a way of relieving stress. Sometimes people are having sex to feel close and connected and to have that sense of intimacy. Some people are having sex because they are, you know, looking for that little bit of sense of risk or adventure. You know, some people want sex because they want to feel maybe like they're taking a break from being a mother, right? Or a break from being a father and feeling a little bit more just like themselves. So looking at like, what are your motivations for having sex is really important, because that gives you an idea then of what it is that you're actually looking for out of the connection. And is there other ways to find that? And, you know, you said as well, like, that sex isn't just about penetration. And when we look at heterosexual relationships and you ask somebody, well, what is sex to you? Most of the time people are thinking that they're talking about, you know, penis and vagina sex, right? So it's all about penetration. And even if you look at the kind of theory behind this, it's kind of almost like the way, if you ask someone to describe sex, people will talk about sex in very, I suppose, ambiguous terms, right? So they'll say more about like the baseball analogy, right? Like getting to the bases, like this is the way sex goes. So, you know, there's maybe a little bit of kissing in the start, then there's floor foreplay, then there's penis and vagina sex, and then that's, it's over then, you know? And so you miss this entire, I suppose, landscape and culture that you can create, like a sexual culture that you can create within your relationship by not expanding that definition, right? So one of the things that I would always say is then learning how to expand what your definition of sex is. So when we can start to include, and this is like even just, I always find like really interesting asking questions like, you know, is kissing sex to you, right? And if that's not, then ask yourself like, is kissing with clothes off sex to you, right? So you start to become really interested in this idea of like, oh, well, if say if I was having sex with a woman and I normally have sex with a man, well, then what would sex be then, you know? And then this helps you to start expanding your definition of what sex is. And when you are then in a relationship where penetration is impossible for whatever reason, and you start to include things like, well, erotic massage is sex for me, right? And then maybe you and your partner start to introduce erotic massage into your relationship, it can start to fulfill the kind of sexual motivations that you're looking for, which help you to take the pressure off sex in the first place. Because when we feel pressure, we will naturally disconnect. And you know, if you're feeling like you don't want to have penetrative sex, then what's going to happen is that when someone maybe comes to you and initiates sex, right? Like, so maybe they're kissing, they want to kiss you, and you're like, oh God, no, this is just going to lead to sex now. And I'm not in the mood for it, so I don't want to lead anybody on. So then what happens is people start avoiding intimacy altogether. So it's allowing ways to take the pressure off. Like even if you were to introduce like a thing where, you know, maybe you're wanting more intimacy with your partner, right? And there isn't enough of it, and you might just get a peck on the cheek or something, yeah, as someone's leaving. Changing that to be, right, let's introduce like a snog before you leave for work, right? Even that can be a really small step. Yeah, it's a really small step. Very little pressure, lasts for a couple of seconds, and it can be a really small way to start to regain that sense of intimacy and connection that you're looking for in the relationship. And when there's a lack of pressure in those situations, then sometimes then that does lead to sex. It doesn't always have to, yeah, right? But sometimes it does lead to sex in a way that's a lot more fulfilling for other people.
Such
right?
a good tip.
I always say, yes, just want to say, like, you know, it's really important to learn sex skills. Any other area of life, like, it's expected that we have to learn how to do things. Mm. If I want to learn how to paint, yeah, right, like, it's actually socially acceptable to go to a painting class, right? It's like socially acceptable. It's also expected, right, that I would learn, you know, the different types of painting materials and the different types of paintbrushes, and I would learn techniques and I would learn methods and ways to apply that. And I would probably find that, you know, yes, maybe I'm naturally really good at using acrylics, but I'm actually really terrible at using water paints, you know, but I actually can go to class to learn how to use watercolors better. Right. And I get a teacher to teach me that, you know.
For someone that's a bit sort of maybe, you know, interested in learning those techniques and getting a bit of guidance around that, you've mentioned the 2 minute snog, but there's obviously certain things that, you know, we can bring into our sexual relationship. Can we talk about sex toys? And can we talk about vulva gazing? And can we talk about sex talk? Because like dirty talk, because I think those things, you know, they're quite, I mean, for me, they're sort of non-negotiables. I feel like everybody needs to have a little bit of one of those in their lives, because like you said, it's not necessarily penetrative sex that certain people can't do or don't want to do, but actually it's quite fun and can be quite playful.
Yeah. And I think it's really important to learn how to, you know, learn how to put sexual creativity back at the center of your sex lives again, because this is where you're going to, you know, be more willing and I suppose more open to like stepping into things. And in order to put sexual creativity at the center of your sex lives, you have to do a couple of things first. The first thing is that you have to learn how to take away sexual perfection, right? The idea that like, if you're going to give someone for a blowjob, for example, or if you're going to dirty talk, right, for the first time with someone, that you're going to get it right the very first time you do it. It's a given when you're learning any kind of skill that you're more than likely going to make mistakes. You're more than likely going to say the wrong thing. It's more than likely going to become extremely messy, and there's going to be embarrassment, and they're probably going to laugh, right? But you continue to do these when you continue to practice and move towards it, and when you learn to take sexual perfection off the table, you understand that actually, oh, making mistakes is all a part of it, right? So you start to switch into a more discovery and exploratory orientated mindset, which is really important. The other thing you need to learn how to do then is when you're talking about sexual creativity is, as I said, learn skills and learn a vast array of skills, because not every skill is going to work for you. So it's learning how to maybe taking two or three things that you learn and then applying it over time. And, you know, when it comes to anything, like, you know, you're talking about sex toys there as well, you know, learning how to use sex toys is also a skill, right? When I'll say, like, you know, oh, you know, teach people how to use sex toys. And people were like, what do you mean teach people how to use sex toys? Like, you just turn them on and go for it. Like, that's it, you know? And it's really interesting because when we have that reaction, right, to sex toys, what we're actually saying is we've learned how to become passive when it comes to our sex life. So we've learned how to switch the toy on. We've learned how to put it on the spot. We've learned how to lie there and feel the sensations, and eventually it brings us to orgasm, potentially, right? Maybe, maybe not. However, when you learn how to take an active role, like with your sex toy, for example, you learn how to use it in more ways than just the one way, right, that you have found works over and over and over again.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. For example, you know, sex toys are often marketed in a very specific way to us, right? So they're marketed in a way that says, this is for women and women's bodies, and this is a G-spot vibrator, so it's for internal use only, and there you go, right? And what happens is that when you are marketed to like that, you only think there's one way to use that toy, for example. When you learn how to, again, add sexual creativity into using sex toys, you can take a clitoral vibrator, like a finger vibrator that's for your clitoris. And it says, like, you know, this is, you know, to bring you to orgasm, a clitoral orgasm. And you can learn how to use that, like, say, like to tickle your neck and to start like activating the erogenous zones. You can use it, say, when you're kissing your partner, to then put it to the back of their neck and then start to have different or fuller sensations or even more sensations, and kind of elevate that experience of kissing even more. You also as well can use that the finger vibrator, for example, when you are in different kinds of sexual positions. When you're experiencing anal sex, we know the clitoral stimulation is really important. So you could be experiencing anal sex, but also be using the clitoral vibrator for kind of activating the clitoris, and that is linked to the pudendal nerve. So it's going to enhance your ability to relax and heighten the sensations that you feel. For example, you could take a wand, you know, like the really big clitoral wands, the big massagers.
Yeah.
You could take one of them. You could massage your entire body to start to awaken your erogenous zones. You can also be giving a blowjob, stick it under your chin or else the back of your head. When we think about how do you fuel your relationship, I would break it down into three different things. And I get people to ask these three questions. And I would always say as well, like, if you take these questions and write them down, and you write the answers out, and maybe your partner takes these questions, writes them down, and they write the answer out, it's really powerful in terms of looking at the ways that you can, again, add fuel to your relationship. So the first question is about, I feel connected to my body when, and then you write down a list of when you feel connected to your body. And these don't just have to be sexual things. I feel connected to my body when I practice yoga. I feel connected to my body when I go for a walk. I feel connected to my body when
I exercise
with my friends. Yeah. Or when I eat well, etc. Then you write down the next question, I feel disconnected to my body when. And it's really important that you write, like, it might be like, oh, well, that's the opposite to what I've just said, but it's really important you write them down. So I feel disconnected to my body when I watch too much Netflix, something like this, right? And you can go on. And why this is important is because arousal is a body felt sensation. we experience the sensations with regards to sex through and pleasure through our body. It's a sense experience, a sensory experience, right? Which includes like all of the senses, right? When we are disconnected from our body, we are numbing out those sensations, right? And that's because we might be overstimulated. So it's really important to know what numbs you out, what overstimulates you, and when you feel disconnected, really important to know what connects you again. The second set of questions is, I turn myself on when, and then I turn myself off when. And it's really important because when you write these down, make sure, and I got people to write these down and I was like, do you see how this is all about the other person? It's not about how you turn yourself on. It's about how someone else turns you on. So you need to make sure that like, I turn myself on when I slow dance to these particular songs, right? Or when I dance to, you know, I don't know, 90s R&B, right? Something like this, right? I turn myself on when, and then you, exactly, like I turn myself off when. And so knowing these things. And then the next set of questions is, they turn me on when, and you write down a list of that. They turn me off when, and you write down that list. And this is really important as well for you to know and to understand, but just even think about, right? The biggest question that people have difficulty with is that middle part, because so many of us don't actually really know what we like or what we don't like.
Not
we
anymore.
We don't actually know what turns us on and what turns us off. So oftentimes this can be a really difficult question. And that's a big highlight for yourself, right? Because if you don't know what works for you and your body, how are you expecting your partner to know what works for you and your body, right? You're asking them to be a mind reader or to be some kind of psychic, right? So you can slowly start to like look at that over time. And then over time, you can build that list and make it bigger for yourself in terms of your own personal turn-ons and turn-offs. But what you have at the end of this is a database of really important information. You, if your partner understanding and knowing that becomes really important, you know, I have a joke like with my partner one day he came home and, or one day I came home and I've been really busy through the month of June. I was like up to my eyes every single day and my freezer was needed to be defrosted and I hadn't got a chance to do it. I came home one day and he just did it off his own back and he came in and like the ice was all over the ground and I was looking, I was like, Jesus Christ, like I'm so turned on right now.
I love
watching
that.
You defrost his freezer, right?
That's amazing. That's brilliant. Now he knows as well. If he ever wants you to get you excited, it's just ice cubes and
yeah, and Judgy, you know, James, pickaxe. If you're listening, it's putting your shit in the dishwasher.
Yeah, we always joke that this was what got us pregnant.
Amazing.
Yeah, defrosting the refrigerator.
Thank you so much for coming on. I definitely need a follow-up podcast because we had so many questions that we couldn't get through, but taken away so much. So thank you. And amazing job in like educating, because it's
definitely,
just, I feel like the world is a better place with Jenny Keane in it. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Great to have you.
Thank you. Thanks, Jenny. Oh, absolutely love Jenny Keane. What an amazing chat.
Yeah, it was. It was. And like, you know, we giggle and all of that kind of stuff, but it's serious. Like it's a serious subject. And from the amount of people that wrote in, and so many of you wrote in all saying the same thing, I just hope that, you know, if you can take anything away from this episode, that everybody feels the same at certain points. Like people worry about their sex life, people, you know, want it to get better, some, you know, sometimes people can't be bothered. It's all normal, like it really is. And I think the fact that you're, you know, anyone listening who's written in just to ask a question for Jenny, the fact that you care, like I think that says so much about, you know, if you're worrying about your relationship, the fact that you care enough to write in and want to make it better, I think that says it all. Like that literally says 100%. It all.
Grateful for your questions today as well, because we did put a couple to her. So but we have got a sex Q&A coming on Friday, so that's going to be great. And that's just going to be between Georgia and I as well. So if you have got those questions that you didn't manage to write in, save them up and get them across to us. And thank you so much for listening to today's podcast. As always, we'd love you to rate, review, subscribe and follow the podcast so you don't miss an episode.
And if you've got any feedback from this episode or anything you'd like to hear from us, then drop us a DM on Instagram. We're on @MadeByMamas and we'll be back on Friday. Made by Mamas is an Insanity podcast production, and today's episode was produced by the lovely Charlotte Mason.
Insanity Group. Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey, y'all. Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.